Chapter 60. Harry Tuck was drinking coffee with Marjorie and George when Ron got home. He lit up at the sight of his mother and father together. He blocked out the existence of George Bombasco, or shoved him far enough away in his mind to make him irrelevant. It was the three of them. It was the way that it always should have been, without a Rocky, and certainly without a Bombasco. "How was the game?" said Marjorie. Ron grinned, and the two of his parents smiled at the way his face dimpled. "Dad was there," said Ron. "I saw the way those coons tried to bully you," said Harry. Ron nodded. "We won. And they'll hate you all the more for it, and will say that it was stolen from them." "They stopped the game because they were afraid," said Ron. "We weren't afraid. Kids on the field weren't afraid." "I don't know why they even play against nigger schools," said George. Ron ignored George. "I was excited to see you there, Dad. Thank you." Marjorie smiled. He always knew what his father needed to hear, and said it to him naturally. When would Harry realize that Ron only said the things that he knew that Harry wanted to hear, because he was afraid of not seeing him anymore? Marjorie waited for Harry to say that he was proud of the way his son played, but in her heart, she knew that he wouldn't say it. He just couldn't. Harry got up to leave. A look of disappointment spread over Ron's face, and then Marjorie watched him try to hide it. She hadn't been wrong to leave Harry Tuck. She told herself that again. She was sure that it was way what she had to do, and didn't matter now anyway. She both hated and loved Harry for the cool ease with which he slid out. She looked at George and closed her eyes. "Well, we better have dinner." Ron could feel that his teachers knew what had happened in the game yesterday. Each of the brothers smiled at him. Nobody put him on the spot. Even Brother Cecil gave him a pass. Ron was doing his reading. His mind was not willing to submit to Latin or French. He did the assignments, but he just couldn't commit the words to memory. They didn't make sense to him. He had words. He was squeaking by in algebra, but some of his classmates weren't. Brother O'Shea said, "Mr. Dalton, you got a 59 on the quiz, didn't you?" Stan Dalton had been called up to stand in the front of the room to receive his quiz. "Yes, brother." O'Shea rocked back on his heels. "That isn't good enough, is it?" "No, brother." Stan Dalton's left eye began to twitch. "Would you prefer them on your palms or your backside?" "I don't understand, brother." Brother O'Shea removed a strap from his belt that looked like the one that Joe the barber used to sharpen his razor when he was about to shave the back of Ron's neck after a haircut. "Hold out your hands, Mr. Dalton." Stan Dalton extended his palms. They were shaking. The strap was a blur when it cracked down on the boy's open palms. He yelped and pulled his palms back. "One more," said O'Shea. "You decide which hand." Stan Dalton hesitantly extended his left hand, the one that he didn't have to write with. The fingers were curled, and O'Shea used the strap to gently straighten them. Then he raised it over his head and cracked it down on the trembling flesh. Dalton yelped and then whimpered. His shoulders slumped. "You may take your seat, Mr. Dalton." The class watched Stan Dalton meekly return to his desk. He was rubbing his hands on his thighs. "Now," said O'Shea, confident that he had their attention, "let's talk about algebraic equations."